The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Nick Psaki. That's P-S-A-K-I, Nick Psaki. He's the Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. Nick, how are you today?
Doing great, John. Thank you.
I bounce around conferences all the time. I'm here, I'm there. And I was in a conference run and once and they had this guy, Nick, come up there and talk. And I said, geez, that guy'd be a great guy on the radio. And I've been begging and pleading. I've been bribing his public relations people. I've been, you know, trying to trap him with nets. And finally, we got him in the studio for an hour. We're going to talk about Pure Storage. We're going to talk about networking and the clouds and all kinds of different things. But before we begin, a lot of listeners say, well, geez, now, why would Gilroy want you in the studio? What's his background anyway? So, Nick, tell us about your background, how you wound up working for Pure Storage, please.
Sure. Spent 20 years in the United States Army, the last three of which I was the intelligence information architect for Army Intel. And obviously, we've got a lot of different challenges in the space, but the performance of our data analytics platforms, the size, weight, power, cooling, these things, these are all tremendous challenges. The amount of data growing is tremendous. So we were looking for technologies that would enable us to reduce footprint, reduce power consumption, improve performance. And what it all came down to ultimately is we realized we had a storage bottleneck. So that led us to start exploring flash storage solutions, PCIe direct attached storage. And ultimately, we did wind up procuring a couple of Pure Storage flash arrays, which I didn't know until I came to work for Pure Storage a couple of years later. So flash and flash storage solves a tremendous problem. The broken leg of the IT stool, networking, compute, and storage. The broken leg is storage. So compute's gotten fast, transmission, switchgear's gotten fast. Storage has to modernize and improve if we want to be able to take advantages of the tremendous performance improvements that have occurred in computing over the past 10 years.
Especially with the new fancy words that they're using. You know, I'm a little bit older than you. I've seen this memory thing grow up over the years. And I was reading an article called Dietz on the Day, Delivering the Data Platform for the Cloud Area. And he talked about this new magic word. And I'm going to send this, read this word right now. And the word is zettabyte. It's like, wait a minute. I'm too old. Zettabyte, really? You're talking zettabytes now?
Zettabytes, 1,000 really, exabytes.
Are you kidding? That's where we're at now.
Well, that's how much data grows year over year around the world. It's the amount of data that's generated. So, yeah, it's a tremendous amount of information. By 2025, IDC estimates that we'll be creating 44 zettabytes. Of data.
What's the next step? I'm a petabytes and
yottabytes.
Y-O-T-T-A.
Yeah.
I remember learning that years ago. Years ago, I had to study all these things for these network tests I was taking, and I studied about SCSI and iSCSI and PCI, and hasn't changed much. It's gotten better and better over the years, huh?
Essentially, yeah. And it's kind of a testament to the longevity and the good design of some of those capabilities that they've lasted this long. iSCSI's proven to be a tremendously powerful protocol for doing storage over a network, given existing Ethernet infrastructure. And of course, the PCI bus, I remember its advent back when I was a young pup in technology, back when I was 22. Yeah. So that's 26 years ago.
I was speaking out in Denver last month, and I took a taxi to the airport, shared it with a physician from Pittsburgh. Turns out to be a really, really well-known guy. And we back and forth. I asked him what he did, and it's kind of interesting what he did. He works a lot of veterans. Anyway, if I'm sharing a taxi with you, and I turn to you and go, okay, Nick, what's Pure Storage do?
Pure Storage makes high-performance, data-reducing, all-flash storage arrays. They're enterprise storage systems. And they provide... That's the nutshell version.
That's it, and that's what you have to know. It takes the old way, and this is a new way. And the magic number that I hear is 5-to-1 or 20%. And they talk about refrigerators, you can talk about racks, wherever you want. But if you have 5 racks, you can convert it to 1 rack, given some of the technology that Pure Storage can provide. Is that the easy number?
Or even better. So across our fleet of arrays that report into our Pure One software as a service management and monitoring platform, is about that is the aggregate average, is 5-to-1 data reduction. In fact, we have it on our homepage on what we call the flash reduce ticker. So that's, a 30-second snap. It is a snapshot that gets regenerated every 30 seconds based off of what we see, the aggregate data reduction of all of our arrays is. And it really depends on the data type and the application. So server virtualization, almost guaranteed, gets you 5-to-1 data reduction. Databases are a little bit different. That data doesn't reduce as well. It's generally about 3-to-1. But in virtual desktop infrastructure, we see customers getting 30-to-1 data reduction.
Wow.
So it is a tremendous capability in terms of reducing overall storage footprint and overall storage requirements while significantly improving performance and improving energy consumption. So it is a game changer. It is an actually transformational technology. It changes data centers.
If you want to see those numbers, you can go to purestorage.com. Boy, that's radio friendly. Pretty easy to find out. But what's interesting is Pure Storage on Twitter has 70,000 followers. I mean, I watched that, and I mean, you only have 7,000 tweets, 70,000 followers. So You're doing something. It's either funny or there's cat pictures or something. But well, that's a lot of followers.
It is interesting. There's a huge appetite for storage modernization, and storage is kind of like the tires on your car. You don't really pay any attention to them until something goes wrong. But the car doesn't go anywhere without the tires either. It's what connects the car to the road. So storage is a lot like that. It doesn't look, you know, exciting. It doesn't look, dynamic, but it is what connects the data to the enterprise. And if the storage is good, your application architecture works really well. When it's bad, it's miserable. But people want to see what we're doing. Pure Storage has done a tremendous job of improving our customers' lives, improving our customers' application performance, and the things that we have to say, people are hungry to hear. And it is pretty exciting because, no, there aren't any cat pictures. It's storage.
Yeah, it's just storage. And a lot of people want to know. And the reason they want to know, because it can save them money. And in a competitive environment, John's Donuts in Ohio can use Pure Storage to beat out Nick's Donuts across the street,
yeah,
or whatever the competitor happens to be. And I think the federal government is in a position where they may not be competing with everyone, but they're competing with a lot of different situations where they have to, you know, manage a data center more efficiently than before. They have to be quick and responsive, and they can't be locked into vendors who every 3 or 4 years put another contractor in front of them and go, okay, sign here. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So Pure Storage was founded in 2009 with three very simple premises: build a better technology, build a better business model, treat customers better, and provide customers with a better experience. So those three things underpin everything that we do. We build great technology, but we also treat our customers better than any company really ever has. If you take a look at our Net Promoter Score, our SAT Metrics audited Net Promoter Score is 83. Now, across the tech industry, it's around 20. So we actually have one of the best Net Promoter Scores of any product in any category worldwide. We treat our customers really well, and our platforms work incredibly well. So we're very proud of that, and we want to continue to strive to be that differentiated company, to be that partner. And treating customers better is an essential part of that.
You know, I teach in the graduate school at Georgetown, and I teach social media marketing. And we can give a 2-hour lecture on Net Promoter Score. There's neither time nor the place for that. What you have to understand is,
indeed,
number one, they try to treat their customers well. But I think hand in hand is they treat their employees pretty well. A couple years back, you got the best company to work in, and I think the San Francisco Bay Area. It's like, well, first of all, how do you recruit these people? Secondly, you treat them better than others, and it's got to be reflected in how they treat their customers. There's a yin and yang there, I think.
It does, and I think we very deliberately look for people who are customer-centric, who are service-oriented, who want to help. And these kinds of people, when you get them together in groups, they attract more people like that. So it almost becomes a self-perpetuating kind of activity. And it is. Pure Storage is a tremendous company to work for. And I think that does get reflected to our customers. They're always pretty astounded when they come to our corporate events, like our recent Pure Accelerate conference, at how excited we are. So it feeds on itself.
Let's take a break. Come back. Talk more about Pure Storage, how it can help my listeners, Govies, and talk about the drastic increase in revenue that Pure Storage has had, and look at what their annual revenue is going to be. It's really a great story to tell. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. If you're trying to look him up on LinkedIn, it's Nick, P-S-A-K-I, but his company's pretty easy, purestorage.com. Well, Nick, I'm an old geezer, and I look things in decades and perspectives and long-term. And when you look at hard drives, you think of, the old Seagate technology and old mechanical hard drives and how that changed over the years, the first initial ones, and look at different systems and change. So from a perspective of like a decade or maybe 15, 20 years here, I mean, the company's been around since 2009. So how has storage changed? And tell me about flash and early flash and what flash is all about today.
It's as you said. So, you know, rotational media fundamentally hasn't changed in several decades. The aerial density, the amount of stuff that you can put on the platters has gotten bigger. But the buses that they're attached to really haven't changed since the SATA bus and the SAS bus. So you've got more data, but it can only move at the same speed. So in order to actually get better density and get better performance and get higher parallelization of the data moving, in order to improve overall performance, you've got to fundamentally change the media. So mechanical media has this problem called physics. You can only move things so fast before they start to break. Flash media is a tremendous... Or memory media in general is a tremendous benefit because it doesn't have any moving parts. It's not a serial accessed media. It's a parallel access media. So for moving very high quantities of data very quickly, memory is far preferable to rotational media. The second thing that we've seen is that obviously over the course of time, NAND flash has gotten incredibly dense. Moore's law works in your favor when you're talking about silicon. Moore's law does not work in your favor when you're talking about hard disks. So we've, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were pretty excited about having 64 megabyte thumb drives. Now we've got 256 gigabyte thumb drives. Well, SSDs have done the same kind of thing. You can get 15 terabyte, 50 terabyte. There's some talk that there might be 200 terabyte memory-based storage media next year. That's just amazing.
So what precipitated this discussion was Steve Jobs with his initial move. Was he the first mover?
Pretty much. So he was the first guy who sat there and said, if we're going to actually make a better product that customers want to have, then we've got to get the hard drives out of the iPods. Now,
right.
Interestingly, the guy responsible for doing that is a gentleman named Michael Cornwell. He's our field chief technology officer.
I connected the dots.
Asia and Pacific and Japan. Absolutely. So we have some of the sharpest minds and some of the most innovative minds in the storage industry and the memory industry working at Pure Storage. When John Colgrove and John Hayes founded this company, the idea was to let's start with memory-based storage and build a platform that is specifically tailored to take advantage of the speed, the parallelism, the high performance characteristics of NAND, but also to mitigate against NAND's legitimate issue, which is that it does wear out over time. So unless you actually build a system that is designed to mitigate against that, you're going to run into problems. And in the early days of flash SSDs, everybody talked about the write cliff. There was a point at which the SSD suddenly started to perform very poorly because the media had been consumed. There are a number of different things that happened over the past 7 to 10 years to really eliminate that problem. And now you see much more of a write slope. But Purity, our operating system's real strength is its media management and the way it treats flash. We get 10 years or more of service life out of consumer-grade memory technologies, consumer-grade MLC, multi-level cell NAND, and triple-level cell NAND. So we're using, you know, current technologies and the best operating system for doing this stuff to get enterprise performance out of commodity parts. And that's very, very important because it helps us control cost and it ensures a very large source of supply.
I'm always in a classroom and I got a whiteboard in front of me. I'm drawing these big graphs that are 6 foot high. And if I drew a graph of the amount of storage requirement coming up in the next few years, and if you look at IoT, I got to get on a ladder and hit the ceiling with that graph. And so only the
Indeed.
Idiots out there aren't going to say, well, how do I store this? And where do I store this? Do I store it in the edge? Do I store it at the data center? And how fast do I need this? And what bad things can happen? And then you got to toss in the subject about encryption. I mean, this is all everyone's pointing to you, Nick.
Exactly. So we talked about this earlier that, you know, we're looking at a projected growth of data overall of 44 zettabytes. The problem is internet capacity doesn't increase at the same speed as the amount of data being grown. So a lot of this data, as Internet of Things and big data analytics, as larger quantities of data are collected, they're not going to be migrated into the cloud. There's simply not enough bandwidth to do it. So we're going to see what we call edge computing. The data is going to remain close to its sensor, and it'll be processed there. Its results will probably be put into the cloud, or subsets of that data may be put in the cloud, but we're not looking at a situation where we're going to have the bandwidth to actually move all of the data. And it kind of ties to the concept of data gravity, where data sort of has mass in a sense. I have a joke that FedEx has the cheapest bandwidth in the world because you can move a petabyte anywhere in the world in 24 hours, but you can't do that over the internet.
Yeah, that's an old school type approach there too.
Sneaker net, airplane net.
So as I was listening to your answer, I was thinking and thinking about innovation and storage and Silicon Valley and your company and DC and back and forth and back and forth. And then like a bolt out of the sky, I pull out my business card and it's from the Homeland Security called the Silicon Valley Innovation Program. I'm saying to myself, well, isn't that where Nick's company is?
As a matter of fact.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, this is Silicon Valley Innovation Program. I mean, you're right here.
Exactly. We have reached out to a couple of the government organizations that are looking for advanced and emerging technologies. We were actually an early investor in our company was InQtel. And then when Secretary Carter, when he was Secretary of Defense, started up DIUX, the Defense Innovation Unit Experimental, I had the good fortune to actually run out to Moffitt and meet up with the group over there. And of course, DIUX has now expanded. The government has this urgent need to discover and leverage advanced and emerging technologies. And given the economics involved and the scale involved, there's just no way to out-innovate Silicon Valley. They've got a tremendous amount of talent. They've got a tremendous financial incentive to build newer and better things incredibly quickly. So it is really gratifying to see the federal government sitting there saying, you know what, we're going to go where the technology and the talent is, and we're going to sit there and evangelize and, of course, go discover things as they emerge so that we can take advantage of them as a government and provide better services to our constituents, reduce risk, gain faster and better insight into the data that we have, and obtain a competitive advantage over our peers around the world.
Did you have any dealings with a guy named Dr. Cameron Gorgonpour over at the Pentagon?
No, I didn't.
Oh, real smart guy. I'll connect you two up. He was in charge of innovation for the Air Force, and this whole innovation, this thing keeps popping up all the time, innovation. So we know that hard drives has changed. I mean, you know that.
They have.
Yeah, and Clayton Christensen wrote a whole book about that, and one chapter was about Seagate hard drives and how they changed. I mean, you talk about disruption. He's the guy who coined the phrase disruption. And I think about the hard drives changing, but it's not just the hard drives changing. It's also, okay, now we got all this information. Okay, now you got to take and understand it, you know? Yeah. I live in rural Virginia. They'd say, you got to commence deciphering. You got to look and understand the analytics. So what good is this without analytics?
So briefly, there's this continuum of knowledge, we call it. So data is just information without any context or relevance. So we're trying to get from data to information. We understand something about the data that we've collected, to intelligence. We've made it semantically relevant to how we're going to make decisions. To knowledge, it forms the basis of how we interact with the world and how we think. So it's very simple. Data to information to intelligence to knowledge. And the only thing that changes is the semantic relevance of that data to the problems that we have. So yeah, you're right. We have huge quantities of data, but what's in there that we want? How do you find a needle in a haystack? The fastest way is with a match and a magnet. Burn down the haystack, find the needle. Well, data analytics try to help us do that. We have explosive data growth of all kinds of sensors. We're wiring up, you know, and having toasters, baby monitors, toothbrushes now tell us things about how people are using them. But so we have all of this information. What's in there that we want to know? So data analytics is driving a tremendous change in business and is having a tremendous impact on storage because that data's got to live somewhere. And we happen to make, you know, one of the finest platforms for serving data.
Let's take a break and come back. I'm going to talk about a haberdasher in Georgetown, and we're going to talk about snapshots.
Awesome.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. Don't let that name fool you. You spell it P-S-A-K-I if you look him up on LinkedIn. Well, before the break, I talked about Georgetown. I was walking through Georgetown the other day, and I saw this little tailoring thing. It said Bespoke Tailoring. And I went home, talked to Jan, and said, Jan, is that like Calvin Klein? She said, no, you idiot. Bespoke is custom made. And I said, oh, so it's a custom made suit. I get it. When it comes to the world of storage, I look at your website, I read your blogs, I see the 250 videos, I go through your tweets, and I see a lot of working with different companies, whether it's Oracle, whether it's SAP, whether it's Microsoft. Microsoft just had their big Inspire event downtown DC. All the hotels were filled up. They had buses filled up the last 3 days. So Bespoke, does that apply to you guys? Do you have customized services that apply to specific vendors?
We do. We actually have a tremendous amount of support for a lot of the major enterprise platforms. So tremendous tight integration with VMware, with Microsoft Windows Server, with Oracle, and you have to. I mean, these are the foundational platforms on which companies build their enterprises. So we would like to make sure that we can tailor our capability to suit their enterprise. And it ties to, you know, the fundamentals of what are government customers looking for and what does Pure Storage do really, really well. Government customers are looking for systems that first and foremost provide a tremendous degree of security. And we do that really well. We're FIPS 140-2 validated for our data at rest encryption. That's always on and included, so you just don't even have to think about it. It just works. We're NIAP and Common Criteria certified, so that means we have passed through a particularly stringent set of security certifications for system administration. So that scratches a lot of the government's "is this system secure" problem. We're very, very simple to operate, very simple to integrate. I can install a FlashArray in about 45 minutes. If it's a 1.5 petabyte system, about 2 hours. But integration with the customer's environments takes 10 to 15 minutes after that, and you're off to the races. That's practically unheard of. So simplicity is huge. It saves a tremendous amount of time, a tremendous amount of effort, and it lets us get on with the business of doing what we bought this stuff to do, which is get meaningful, relevant, timely, and accurate information to make smart decisions. So what else the government customers worried about? Size, weight, power, and cooling. So a flash array generally is about 1/10 the size of an equivalent spinning disk array in terms of overall size. It consumes about 1/10 the power. It uses probably 1/10 the cabling as well. It's a very, very simple system to connect, and it is very compact and tremendously efficient. That alone is a huge savings in data center real estate, rack space, and power space and cooling. There's a whole bunch of OPEX costs that get reduced by about 90% as a result of those savings. Sustainment and support, these are like a number one. So Pure Storage's evergreen support model has a key component called Forever Flash and Fair Flat and Forever Maintenance. We never increase the cost of maintenance on a system over its lifetime. You know, when you go do a maintenance renewal at the 3-year mark, it's the same cost as it was when you first purchased it. Same repeats at year 6, at year 9, at year 12. But the cool thing about that is every 3 years, we do an in-place non-disruptive tech refresh of the controller. So you get 40 to 60% more performance every 3 years simply for the cost of maintenance that never goes up. So that's a huge benefit to customers. Your storage never gets old. You never have to do a data migration. You never have to do a forklift upgrade.
Forever young, huh?
Forever flash, evergreen. And then finally, there's speed. It's really the last thing that we talk about. All of those other things are critical business factors and implementation factors. Of course, it's fast. It's flash. So, you know, this kind of the last thing we talk about is what kind of performance you're going to get. Well, it's going to be about 10 times to 20 times faster than anything you've used previously.
Because it's flash.
Because it's flash.
Earlier, I teased your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
And on your LinkedIn profile, the three top skills you have listed are intelligence analysis, intelligence, and military. Sounds like just what we were talking about. I mean, sounds like this is where it's all applied. I mean, it's applied to those areas.
So I guess one of my aha moments that happened really late in life, which is proof that I'm only half as smart as I actually think I am. Intelligence is an endeavor that we all engage in all the time. Now, military intelligence has a particular slant of relevance. What are bad guys doing? How do I stop them from doing it? How do I reduce my own risk and accomplish my missions and objectives? That happens everywhere. Business intelligence is the same thing. How do I gain an understanding of my market space? How do I gain a competitive advantage over my rivals in that market space? How do I differentiate myself? How do I deliver better services? What do people want? So the purpose is different, but the process is the same. And the desired outcome is the same too. We want to be successful in our business. We want to deliver better services to our constituents. We want to have a competitive advantage over our adversaries. You can't do that unless you can process your data very quickly. And if your data can't move quickly, then you can't get those results in a timely fashion. And that's why flash storage is important. It's not really a storage array. It's the data server.
You know, your skills are much better than mine. One of my skills is improvisational comedy. Hey, way different areas we're looking at here. During the break, I got out my old camera and took a snapshot of you. Now, that's an old, old term that was used back 30 or 40 years ago, but it's a term that's used in your world.
Yes, it is.
And so it used to be you'd get out a Polaroid camera and put on a flash bulb and take a snapshot and replace the bulb. Then you have physical film and you take to the drugstore.
Yeah.
But and that's where the term snapshot kind of originated, a shot from a camera. So what is a snapshot in your world?
So snapshots in our world are actually pictures in time, if you will, or point in time copies of data volumes. So why is this useful or beneficial? At a given point in time, we want to be able to say, this is what the data looks like, and we want to save that, put it in a photo album or in a snapshot store, if you will, so that if something bad happens, we can go back to a previously known good state. So let me give an example of why snapshots could be really valuable. Somebody clicks on the link in an email, and suddenly a system's infected with ransomware. That starts to propagate across your enterprise. This is bad. But if we've been taking snapshots on a 15 or 30 minute interval, we can go back to 15 minutes ago, restore the entire environment instantaneously, because that's kind of the magic of how Pure Storage's systems work. And that ransomware does not exist in the environment anymore. We've restored from a previous known good state. And snapshots are not a new technology. They've existed in spinning disk systems for a long time. But the problem with doing this on disks and with legacy systems is generally you need to have a space reservation. There's got to be room to actually park the snapshot. It doesn't happen instantaneously because you actually have to move bits and bytes on the disk media itself. With memory systems, with flash systems, you're actually just creating pointers in memory registers saying this is over here, that's over there. You're updating metadata. So this is a memory-based operation that happens literally instantaneously, and we can repeat it thousands of times because we don't actually take up any additional space when we take snapshots. So it's incredibly space efficient. You can have 3,000 snapshots of the same volume, and you're still only taking up the same amount of space as the original volume itself. Wow. So there's no increase, there's no additional capacity required to make this happen, and it is literally instantaneous.
In my world, there's something called wayback.org where you can go to a website and take a look at what it looked like 6 months ago, 6 years ago.
Love the Wayback Time Machine on the internet.
I love it because I can see what Pure Storage was like a year ago.
It's
what
true.
Were they focusing 6 years ago? And it's the same idea applied. But in your world, think of virtual machines and instantly moving back. This is not just making donuts in Ohio. This is pretty tricky.
This is. So one of the things that I've done, we created a couple of deployable kits for our own purposes. We take them to shows. We've got one over at the Defense One show down at the museum today. When we first created the environment, we got it set the way we wanted to. We actually snapshotted the whole environment. Now, trade shows, things happen. We deliberately try and break systems. Software gets funky, what have you. What we're able to do for every show that we go to is restore the entire environment from its original snapshots and put it back in its baseline state. And we can do it instantaneously. So we always know that we've got a functional system the next time we deploy it. This is an incredible, and we do this in front of customers too, and they're just blown away. I mean, it really works exactly the way we say it does, and it's dirt simple. So it goes back to those five S's we talked about earlier. Simplicity is a huge time saver. Time is money. And if we can make things simpler for people, they can get other things done in their day rather than having to monkey around with administrivia.
Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about, I think, the company, what you read to keep up with storage, and maybe where the future of storage is going to be beyond zettabytes. Maybe that's the title, Beyond Zettabytes.
Beyond Zettabytes.
You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer, Pure Storage, and that's spelled P as in Paul, S-A-K-I, if you want to stalk him or look him up on LinkedIn or find out his background. We've been talking about storage, talking about bouncing around different topics, this and that and the other thing. We're talking about names and words and everything else. And in the break, we talked about Jeopardy. So I'm going to give you a Jeopardy question. You can buzz in wherever you want here, Nick. You ready?
Okay.
Okay, so for 10 points on Jeopardy, non-volatile memory. What the heck is it and what does it mean to my listeners?
I thought I was supposed to ask the question.
NVMe. So why should we even care?
What is non-volatile memory express? Well, yeah. Interesting. SSDs are sort of a compromise. We've got to get this media into the system in a way that it can talk to applications without needing drivers or translators or anything else. So the solution to that was to put it on the disk bus. That makes sense. I mean, we're making a solid state disk, so we'll treat it like a disk. Well, that comes with a huge series of performance compromises. The disk bus isn't all that fast. Compared to the PCIe bus, it's actually very slow. So you can only move data as fast as the disk bus can actually move data. So let's just say that's 6 gigabits a second, 12 gigabits a second, depending on which flavor of SAS you're using.
That's your bottleneck. Yeah.
And it's serial. So that's serial attached SCSI, which means you've got one lane into the disk. You've got one lane on your highway.
Serial SCSI, that seems like an
acronym. Exactly. So you're trying to get, you know, everybody into FedEx Field, but you only get one gate. So non-volatile memory express is a protocol that lets us address the storage as memory on the PCIe bus. So that gives us literally 64,000 lanes on the highway to move data. So we can make the process incredibly parallel. We can answer more storage service requests, reads or writes faster. So what we see is a tremendous reduction in latency, the amount of time it takes to do something, and a tremendous increase in bandwidth or throughput. So we're actually able to move more data faster, and you can think of latency as your 0 to 60 time. How long does it take you to go from 0 to 60? How quickly do you get the car up to speed? Whereas throughput is more like how fast are you going? So NVMe is very important because it allows us to start treating the storage media like memory rather than treating it like disk. And this is going to be essential in improving storage performance and system performance and application performance all the way up the stack as we start working with these much larger quantities of data, these big databases, these big NoSQL databases, these Internet of Things repositories and data lakes and all the rest of this stuff that, you know, that we've got. And government collects a tremendous amount of information. I mean, think about this. That's 300 million plus tax returns the IRS gets every year.
That's your return and my return, so we got to be careful about that.
Exactly.
One.
So it's got to be secure, but we've got to know the faster the IRS can process those tax returns, the faster we get our checks back.
So years ago they had a PCI specification, had a SCSI specification. We know that,
right?
And so this is a specification, non-volatile memory host controller specification.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is manufacturers are going to comply with that specification.
Correct.
And it's going to allow companies to take advantage of it.
Right.
And if you're a company like ABC Company or Pure Storage, you're going to say, this is a good idea. What we're going to do is we're going to take advantage of this improvement and increase throughput. And so that's one of the advantages that you have.
Right.
Because a loose, flexible Silicon Valley company go, hey, this change is on the horizon. What's this hardware change going to do to impact my customer's ability to make decisions?
These kinds of standards are really important because it gives us all across the industry a common framework to engineer against, a common understanding of what it is we're going to be able to plug into. In Pure Storage's case, we've been building NVMe-based systems since 2015 when we launched the FlashArray M. Our recently launched FlashArray X actually is an entirely NVMe system. So in the FlashArray M, the write cache, the NVMe drives in the system are designed and built by us, and they're NVMe drives. But the rest of the media in the system are actually SAS SSDs. Well, in the case of the FlashArray X, we took advantage of the fact that we have this PCIe plumbing all throughout the system, and we designed and built our own direct flash modules on the NVMe specification so that we could direct connect these flash drives to the controllers and take advantage of that tremendous reduction in latency and that tremendous improvement in performance. But we also had to do something kind of unusual because we have a dual controller system. We had to design and build dual ported drives. So in the event that there's a controller failure, we don't lose the pass to the media. The system continues to run. The customer doesn't know anything happened. This is very important. But we can use anybody else's NVMe drives theoretically as well, because we understand the protocol that that drive's going to present to us. This is going to be really important as we go beyond NAND in the future as well. When we start talking about new memory technologies like 3D XPoint and Memristor and SpinRAM and TorqueRAM and the rest of those, how will the systems talk to that media? And NVMe gives us a protocol to talk to this media. So it's a common understanding of how these devices are going to attach to systems and how applications are going to interact with them. It's very important.
I'm going to have to quote the great philosopher Ron Burgundy. And what he would say is that NVMe is kind of a big deal
for the data center.
It's kind of a big deal for the data center. It's a little bit of a shakeup there. I mean, it's almost as much a change as flash memory was 8-10 years ago. Let's throw out the big term, paradigm shift. This is a shift here.
It is. It is a big transformation. So what NVMe, the non-volatile memory express specification, is going to let us do is unleash the full potential of these memory-based storage systems and storage class memory. I would say that if you want an analog to what the shift from spinning disk to flash was like, as we look around the studio here, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 displays. All of them are flat panel LCD or LED displays. There's not a single cathode ray tube in here. And kind of the funny part is we still watch TV like it's TV, but what we're watching it on is so fundamentally different than what we used to watch it on, that it is really a radical transformation. And it was really breathtaking how little time it actually took for big old tube TVs to disappear. There is no industrial capacity worldwide for manufacturing those kinds of TVs anymore. Everything's a flat panel. Your smartphone's a flat panel. NAND-based and flash-based and memory-based storage systems are having that same kind of tremendous tidal effect on the storage industry, on the computer industry. But what customers are doing, what you and I do with our data, still looks and feels kind of the same. NVMe is just going to make it much faster and gives us a platform to grow on for the next 20 years. It'll be, a specification standard that's going to be with us for a very long time.
One way to keep up with all this is on Twitter.
Yes.
And the Twitter handle for the govies here, especially for the federal government, is @PureGov. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed.
So you can follow @PureGov and find out what's going on. It's always hard to predict what's going to happen in the future, especially when it comes to zettabytes and petabytes and yottabytes and nekabytes or something. So I'm going to put you on this. Gilroy bytes. So what's next? I mean, are we going to run out of names? A something byte? A something number two byte? What's going to happen here, Nick? You have to have the answer, buddy.
I really wish I did. I know that the amount of things that we're storing is going to get bigger and bigger. Even if we're throwing away a lot of old junk, even if we get to the point where we sit there and say, I'm just not going to keep this stuff from 15 years ago anymore. Government customers frequently don't have that option. But the good news is that I believe that the storage media itself, the memory technologies, are going to keep up with the rate of change. Density is going to work in our favor. We run out of die space, we start stacking them taller. Somebody out there is going to have a great idea that's going to fundamentally change the way we do this anyway. It's going to happen. It always does. Necessity is the mother of invention. But right now, I think that storage class memory and memory-based storage systems are probably going to be what happens in storage in your laptop, in your smartphone, in your data center for the next 15 to 20 years. And that market's just going to continue to grow because we're going to keep storing more and more data.
I saw it happen 10 years ago. Aileen Black was sitting in here 10 years ago talking about VMware.
Yeah.
And she said she thinks it's going to be a big deal. And I had her in early. And Diane Greene, of course.
That
and,
would be an and, understatement.
And guess what? She was right.
The
she
world
the
is
right
virtualized.
Horse, right? And so why? Because people were getting sick and tired of going down to the network guy and begging to spin up a server. And you'd have to beam donuts or hot sauce or something and maybe get a server. Maybe you wouldn't.
You'd have to buy another server if you wanted to run another application.
Right. Imagine that.
Yeah. So, virtualization was crucial to data center reduction and better operational efficiency in data centers.
And I see these big moves and changes and all kinds of different words to describe a tectonic plates moving. But I think this is the next big change in data center. And in the data center world, this is going to be probably marked when they make the history of this maybe in 10 years and go, well, back in 2017, there was a big kind of change and people started taking advantage and some didn't.
You wanted an idea of big. We had a customer who's a geospatial and geophysical engineering company. And in another company, IHS Markit, they removed 20 racks of storage when they bought their first flash blade systems. Those flash blade systems are only 4U tall.
Yes.
That is a reduction of a tremendous amount of electricity. Let's just assume it's 10,000 watts per rack.
Yeah, well, there's 20 refrigerators plugged in and unplugged 19 of them.
Exactly. Actually, you replaced them with something the size of a microwave oven that consumes about that much electricity. And we've had guys have to adjust the temperatures in their data centers because when they go to our systems, it drops the temperature tremendously. The amount of cooling required goes way down.
We're going to have to cool it and end the show here.
Darn it.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we had Nick Saki, Principal Systems Engineer from Pure Storage. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.